Days away, but instead of pleasing a full house, musicians with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra will be picketing.
Is it possible that we will never have a DSO in this city again, another Detroit Symphony Orchestra?
I couldn't imagine that.
For 6 months last winter, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra was silent. Its future hung in the balance during a bitter strike.
While General Motors went through their bankruptcy, Ford went through a near-death experience in that regard. I think the orchestra is right in the midst of that period themselves.
Actually, if I were to buy a lotto ticket and win, I'd still play in the Detroit Symphony because I love it.
Once one of the great American orchestras, the Detroit Symphony's journey parallels that of its hometown, now the epitome of U.S. urban decline. Symphony for Detroit.
Two biggest losers are the musicians and the people of Detroit.
This week's Radio 3 Sunday feature, starting at 9:30.
BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio. You can also listen to us live online. Just gone 1 o'clock, time for the news read by David Cornett.
Scotland Yard has said it couldn't have predicted the extent of the rioting which broke out in North London last night, in which 26 of its officers were injured. More than 40 people were arrested after violence flared following a protest in Tottenham against the fatal shooting by police of a local man, Mark Duggan. Buildings and homes were set on fire, police cars were burnt out and shops and banks were looted. The Home Secretary, Theresa May, has said she condemns the riots utterly. Senior finance officials from the G7 countries have held telephone conference calls on the international debt crisis as efforts continue to calm the markets before trading resumes tomorrow. Central bank governors of the 17 countries which use the euro will also hold emergency talks later this afternoon. They'll discuss whether the ECB should start buying up Italian and Spanish government bonds to help restore confidence in their finances. Opposition activists in Syria say government forces have launched attacks on two towns, killing at least 27 people. Eyewitnesses reported tanks storming the northeastern city of Deir Ezzor after a heavy bombardment which began before dawn. The latest reports say many parts of the city are now under government control. In Afghanistan, investigations are continuing into yesterday's helicopter crash, which killed 38 people, mostly Americans. The United States Chinook was apparently shot down by a Taliban rocket. It was America's biggest single loss since their invasion of Afghanistan 10 years ago. The father of one of the four young men who were wounded by a polar bear which killed a teenager has been told they'll be flown back to the UK from Norway this afternoon. The parents of 17-year-old Horatio Chapel, who died in the attack, have described their son as strong, fearless and kind. And the weather, heavy rain with the risk of localised flooding across much of Scotland. Elsewhere, it'll be windy with a mixture of sunshine and showers. Top temperature, 20 degrees Celsius. BBC News and Weather at 1:03.
And it was read by David Cornett. Well, now on Radio 3, today's early music show, and Catherine Bott reflects on a further highlight from this year's York Early Music Festival.
A summer evening in York, and a contented and discerning audience is emerging from one of the city's many churches and the third concert of the day in the 2011 York Early Music Festival. They've already been treated to a lunchtime selection of 18th century Yorkshire ballads and an early evening display of songs, reading and dances by Playford and Purcell. And day six of the festival has ended with contemplative, mesmeric, sacred choral music from the first decades of the 16th century, performed by the 12 young voices of the Brabant Ensemble, directed by Stephen Rice. The church of St Michael le Belfry, hard by the Minster, was built on the site of a derelict medieval church and completed in 1536. Much later in the century, Guy Fawkes was baptised there. But when the music in this concert was new, so was St Michael's. The Brabant Ensemble specialises in 16th century masterpieces, and founder-director Stephen Rice delights in digging out the work of lesser-known composers. Their programme demonstrated the contrasts and convergences of musical styles in three European countries whose mighty monarchs were jockeying for position in the early 16th century. Henry VIII of England, his Spanish father-in-law, Ferdinand of Aragon, and François I of France. And the singers began in France with music by Pierre Moulu. The title is very conventional, Mater Floreat, May the Mother Flourish. But it's not the Marian tribute you might expect rather a witty, punning list of French musical movers and shakers. Benoit, Obrecht, Compère, Brumel, Isaac, the incomparable Josquin, Mouton with the Golden Fleece.
Thank you.
the Brabant Ensemble, directed by Stephen Rice, beginning their concert in the 2011 York Early Music Festival with Pierre Mouly's celebratory list of eminent musicians, all of them exhorted to give honour to the King and Queen with strings and organ. They continued with a more conventional intercession to Mary, an antiphon by the leading English composer of the 1520s, John Taverner. In Mater Christi Sanctissima, voices are raised in prayer. Most Holy Mother of Christ, our only hope, we dare to make petition to your Son. devotional music from early Tudor England by John Taverner, sung by the Brabant Ensemble. We've heard music from France and England, now it's the turn of Spain. When King Ferdinand, or Fernando of Aragon, had married Isabel of Castile, they'd created themselves as a brand to rule over a newly united Spain, the Catholic monarchs. But after Isabel's death at the beginning of the 16th century, things became more complicated, with more than one claimant to the Spanish throne. Fernando's daughter, Catalina, briefly married to the English Prince Arthur, had been swiftly widowed and then kept as a virtual hostage until the future King Henry VIII was old enough to marry her himself and make her known to posterity as Catherine of Aragon. Father and son-in-law joined together in 1511 to sign a Treaty of Westminster, a pledge of mutual aid and support against the troublesome French. But 9 years later, that great fête champêtre called the Field of Cloth of Gold took place, an early attempt at the Entente Cordiale between England and France. I think shifting sands would be le mot juste with regard to European politics at the time. The Catholic monarchs of Spain had always taken comfort in music after a hard day at an auto da fe. Understandably, Fernando continued the habit at his Aragonese court, and his leading composer from 1498 until 1516 was Francisco de Peñalosa, who was a pioneer of a new and more international style of writing after years of musical insularity in Spain. The Brabant Ensemble sing the Gloria from Peñalosa's Misa el Ojo, the enigmatically titled Mass of the Eye.
Yeah.
The Gloria from a Mass by Peñalosa, doubtless a comfort to King Ferdinand of Aragon. We've heard music from all the three countries represented in the Brabant Ensemble's York concert. Time now to hear about the ensemble itself. Founder and director Stephen Rice holds a fellowship in the Creative and Performing Arts at Southampton University, and he's published articles on a number of Renaissance composers. He has a background in singing himself as a former choral scholar at King's College, Cambridge. During rehearsals in St. Michael the Belfry, I asked him how the Brabant Ensemble came about.
Well, the Duchy of Brabant is an area that's now divided between the northern part of Belgium and the southern part of the Netherlands. It was one of the territories that Charles V came to control, part of the Burgundian holdings from the late 15th century onwards. And I chose the name purely because a large amount of the music that we perform comes from this area. That's not to say that we never do music from outside it, of course, Spain, Flanders, France, you name it. But this is where the core of our repertory seems to come from.
Stephen Rice. The next music from the Brabant Ensemble is from England, by a composer who, as a second son, was originally destined for a career in the church and was educated accordingly. When his elder brother died untimely, he changed direction, but music was important to him all his life, and he's credited with several compositions which are still loved today. If you believe Flanders and Swan, this man even wrote Greensleeves, whose royalties, of course, go to royalty. You're probably ahead of me here, of course, but I'm talking about King Henry VIII. And the Brabant Ensemble included the King's only surviving Latin work in their programme, a transparent and quite old-fashioned setting of that erotic text from the Song of Songs, Quam pulchra es, how beautiful you are and how comely, my most beloved, in your charms.
Come.
Sacred but Sensuous Music by King Henry VIII of England, sung by the Brabant Ensemble in their concert of music from 16th century England, France and Spain. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and our next composer is the Frenchman Jean Mouton, who was court composer to both Louis XII and François I. This is the Sanctus from his Missa Tu es Petrus, Thou art Peter.
Thank you.
Holy, 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 Lord God of Sabaoth, heaven and earth are full of thy glory. Hosanna in the highest. The Sanctus from a Mass by Jean Mouton, with Stephen Rice directing the Brabant Ensemble. The group included a piece by a Spanish composer who was active long after the pioneering Peñalosa, Cristóbal de Morales. His music reflects the increasing Spanish interest in Marian motets as the 16th century wore on, in stark contrast to the new religion that had come about in England in part because of Henry VIII's marital difficulties. When I talked to Stephen Rice, our conversation moved naturally to the question of national styles in music. Where, if anywhere, did French, English, and Spanish music converge in the 16th century?
I think probably Jean Mouton is the key figure here. The English style has always been understood as rather rhapsodic, very florid, with large ranges and so on. The John Taverner certainly reflects those characteristics of English music of the early 16th century. But Jean Mouton, who, despite being one of the great figures of music history, is very little performed today, actually incorporates some of the rhapsodic elements of English music into his Mass. It's the only five-part Mass that he wrote.
But Spanish music, I don't associate the word rhapsodic with Spanish music of the 16th century. It's much more grounded, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose it's later in the century that Spanish music starts to be associated with a particular type of religiosity. And, of course, the Jesuit Thomas Luis de Victoria is at the forefront of that. But I think we'll see in Cristóbal de Morales' music the same sort of spirituality. The Salve Regina, which is set alternately to chant and polyphony, is a piece that develops a very sophisticated religious feeling throughout its quite substantial length, I would say.
Oh.
Cristobal de Morales, Salve Regina, Hail Queen, Mother of Mercy, to thee we cry, the exiled sons of Eve, O Clement, O Holy, O Sweet, Ever Virgin Mary. The Brabant Ensemble, directed by Stephen Rice. The third English piece in their York Early Music Festival programme was actually by a Fleming, Philip van Wilder, who enjoyed a tremendous career at the courts of both Henry VIII and his sickly son and heir, Edward VI. Van Wilder taught the boy music and was an admired lutenist. His compositions are mainly songs to delight the king, but he did leave seven sacred pieces, and this austere setting of the penitential text, Aspice Domine, is generally held to be the finest of them. Behold, O Lord, how the city full of riches is become desolate. She weeps bitterly in the night, and her tears are on her cheeks. She has none to comfort her, save only you, our God.
Thank you.
sorrowful music from Tudor England by Philip van Wilde. After the comparative bleakness of that work, another piece by Cristóbal de Morales gave the concert a serene and comforting end, as Stephen Rice directed the singers in a setting of a hymn of praise to Mary, Queen of Heaven, Regina Caeli. The Brabant Ensemble. Stephen Rice directed the singers in a setting of a hymn of praise to Mary, Queen of Heaven, Regina Caeli, by Cristóbal de Morales. And then, as the audience made their way out into the still not quite dark July night, another day of music making at the York Early Music Festival was over.
Catherine Bott reporting from the 2011 York Early Music Festival. The producer was Chris Wines. And you can hear further highlights from this year's festival in the Early Music Show next weekend, including a concert given by the City Music, which sets out to recreate the kind of sounds that Queen Elizabeth I would have heard during one of her royal visits about the country. Also, you might like to know that edited editions of the programme are now available as a weekly podcast. Full details can be found on the Radio 3 website.
Four Saturday afternoon concerts from the BBC Proms. On BBC Radio 3, the Proms Saturday matinee concerts bring together the music of Richard Rodney Bennett, Harrison Birtwistle, Hildegard of Bingen and Sofia Gubaidulina in the spectacular acoustic of London's Cadogan Hall. Hear every note here on BBC Radio 3 and join me, Christopher Cook, for the first of the four this Saturday afternoon from 3 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
Well, tonight's Prom Live from the Royal Albert Hall brings Christian Tetzlaff playing the Brahms Violin Concerto with Edward Gardner conducting the BBC Symphony Orchestra. And after the interval, four top soloists and the BBC singers join the orchestra for the rarely heard original version of Mahler's Das Klagende Lied, a work where the young Mahler hit upon his own unique style. Tonight's account includes Waldmärchen, the emotive first panel of Das Klagende Lied, dealing with the quest of brother knights for a flower that'll win a queen's hand. But their rivalry leads to sibling murder. The score of this original three-part version of Mahler's Das Klagende Lied only resurfaced as recently as 1969. So that's Brahms and Mahler, tonight's Prom, live from the Royal Albert Hall, starting here on BBC Radio 3 at 7 o'clock. It's 2 o'clock, and for the next couple of hours, another chance to hear last Wednesday evening's Prom. It's introduced by Andrew McGregor.
The 2011 Prom's theme of French connections takes us to ancient and distant worlds in the company of two generations of French composers who share a fondness for sensuous harmonies and deliciously evocative orchestration. We're going to hear three scores by Debussy and Ravel. Ravel takes us to ancient Greece for his ballet Daphnis and Chloe, a choreographic symphony, he called it, filled to the brim with brilliant colours and magical harmonic touches. In some ways, it's the polar opposite of Ravel's Bolero, which ends the first half of the concert, a perfectly scored minimalist crescendo. And the concert begins with a symphonic poem by Claude Debussy that, for some commentators, is the upbeat to modern music. Prelude à l'après-midi d'un faun, the prelude to the afternoon of a faun, Debussy's response to a poem by Stéphane Mallarmé. And after it, cellist Lynn Harrell is the soloist in a concerto written for Rostropovich by French composer Henri Dutilleux, whose 95th birthday we're marking at the Proms. To some, Dutilleux has inherited the mantle of Debussy and Ravel, and in Tout un monde lointain, a whole distant world, he takes his inspiration from Baudelaire, a French poet who was a powerful influence on Mallarmé. So you can begin to hear just how well woven our French connections are this evening. And if you detect the slightest of Scottish accents, then that's hardly surprising, as this is the first of the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra's Proms this season with chief conductor Donald Runicles. We'll be hearing his thoughts on Ravel's Daphnis a little later. But first, we put ourselves into the hoofprints of Mallarmé's faun, the forest spirit that's half man, half goat, as he rests in a sun-dappled classical landscape, remembering an erotic encounter. Debussy's L'après-midi d'un faun may seem to follow the outline of the poem, yet it fashions a set of musical images and impressions that free it from the words as it envelops us in its own sensuous world. What did Mallarmé himself think of Debussy's musical reaction to his poem? Well, the poet sent a letter to the composer saying he'd just left a concert performance deeply moved, and he said that it was only at odds with his text, inasmuch as it went much further into nostalgia and into light, with finesse, with sensuality, with richness. And the letter ends, "I press your hand admiringly, Debussy. Yours, Mallarmé." The men were already friends. In fact, they used to go and listen to Gregorian chant together in one of the churches in Paris, and they were seen together at Wagner opera premieres in the city as well. Well, that applause was for the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra's guest leader, David Adams, already in his place on stage. And to conduct them in Claude Debussy's L'après-midi d'un faun, here comes chief conductor Donald Runicles, ready to cue the famous shimmering flute solo that opens a window onto another world.